Thank you, Richard. Thanks for the great introduction. Thank you for the warm welcome. It's exciting for me to be here and an honor to be at the Transition to the Bioeconomy Conference. I really do appreciate the invitation. It's a chance to get out of Washington, D.C. That's always a good thing. I don't know if any of you have been outside today, but it's a gorgeous day outside. It's a great day in America. It's a great day to be here in St. Louis to be with you all. I want to congratulate you, Richard, and all of you who are involved for the 75th anniversary of the foundation. I really appreciate that milestone. You know, it's 75 years of giving American agriculture a forum for a healthy give and take of ideas and kind of pushing the bounds of knowledge on issues that shape agriculture and have shaped agriculture over the past seven decades. We're here this week to push those limits once again. And my thanks to the Foundation for sponsoring this series on the new bioeconomy. I'm really pleased that USDA can play a strong part and a strong collaborator in this important work. We have some terrific representation here. I see several USDA experts in the audience, and I know that they've interacted with you throughout your time here. And we're pleased to be able to look at the issues of renewable energy as it comes of age. I was thinking about that this morning. You know, we just went through my introduction, which is kind of like my biography. And one of the pieces that isn't in the biography, in the printed one, and Richard didn't mention this morning, was that in 2002, I had the opportunity to be on one of the first reality TV shows, Junkyard Wars. And this morning, you know, I was reading the newspaper, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, and there's an article in there called Biofuels Bang, and it has a question mark behind it. And I was thinking about this TV show, The Junkyard Wars, and the premise of this TV show is to put teams in a junkyard, and you build a contraption in 10 hours. And then the thought is those contraptions, you compete against each other to see who built the better machine. And when we were on in the 2002 season, I had the opportunity to be the captain of the High Flyers from North Dakota. And our competition was to build a car dozer. And a car dozer's job was to move a bunch of junk cars on the highway out of the way, and the first machine that got through that mess was the team that was going to win. And, you know, 10 hours seems like a pretty limited amount of time to build something like this. Our machine tended to look a lot like a North Dakota snowplow, you know, but 10 hours, you think, how are you going to do this in 10 hours? Well, let me tell you, that's nothing, because as the time starts ticking down, it gets worse and worse. Now, they don't tell you what time it is for the first 5 hours, but then they say, okay, you have 5 hours left, and four, and three. Well, I got to tell you, we got to the one-hour mark, and when the one-hour announcement was made, you know, things were looking pretty grim. I pulled the team together and said, okay, gang, we've got an hour, and here is what we have to do. We have to weld our V-plow together and attach it to the frame. We have to install the rear axle and dual wheels that we built and put the tracks, the all-terrain tracks that we built to put on there. By the way, it would probably be a good idea to get our machine running, you know. And we have an hour, but we can do this. You know, we can get it done. The hosts of the show, Tyler and Karen, both started laughing. The technical folks kind of crossed their eyes, you know. But really, in the end, we had a good design. We had a lot of good preparation. And we had built our machine in modules, so in the end it kind of came together. We won that competition. And I was reminded of that this morning when I was reading the newspaper, this article that talked about cellulosic ethanol, the next big thing. I don't know if all of you saw that article today, but the premise of the article was really, can we make it? Can we meet these goals? It pointed out that no commercial scale refinery exists, that researchers have yet to agree on the best technology for fuel conversion, and there is no distribution network to handle the fuel once it's made. hey, we're there. We got it done. We can do this. And of course, you know, it's going to take a lot of work and a lot of effort, but I'm seeing the finish line here and excited about that. You know, for now, our USDA experts are paying special attention to the impact on the environmental and the rural development. Coming of age, of course, usually implies some pitfalls there as well as the potential. And it's no different in biofuels. We're all navigating some very new terrain together. Last week, the administration took an important step to help smooth this transition and to guide our nation's energy future. Energy Secretary Sam Bodman and myself stood together at USDA's Ag Central in Washington, D.C. on the patio, and we released the National Biofuels Action Plan. The plan considers the whole picture of biofuels in this country. It recognizes the obstacles and the barriers to increased biofuel production. And it recognizes that the level of maturity reached by the biofuel industry now warrants even greater commitment by our administration that has worked so hard to advance renewable energy. Since the beginning of this decade, we have transformed the policy environment. The United States is a world leader in waste energy, in solar to thermal electric, and in geothermal. And as probably you all know better than anyone else, we're first in the production of biofuels. First in ethanol, second in biodiesel. We're growing in both areas and how important that is. This year, we expect to produce 9 billion gallons of ethanol here in the United States, essentially based on cornstarch. That's 3 times the amount that we produced just 5 years ago. And we're the world's leader in bringing cellulosic ethanol out of the laboratory into production as well. We're on track to reinvent this industry in the very near future. The Biofuels Action Plan is the product of 2 years of work by the Federal Biomass Board. And really, that doesn't do it justice. I mean, that comment talks about 2 years' worth of work, but it is a major example of agencies all across government pulling together and looking at how to reshape our nation's energy policy. Now, I know not many of us think that government agencies getting together is a good thing, you know, but really, when it comes to biofuel production, we do have one big advantage. Congress and President Bush have given us some pretty clear direction on where we need to end up. In 2007, President Bush asked the nation for a 20 in 10 program, how to reduce the use of gasoline 20% in the next 10 years. The key part of this proposal was the renewable fuel standard that Congress enacted last year. It calls for the production of, the production of 36 billion gallons of biofuels by the year 2022. Congress works that way. You know, they asked for 10 years, they gave us 15. But, you know, that little extra we might need to get this job done. But it caps the production of corn-based ethanol at 15 billion gallons a year. And that clearly then requires us to move forward with the next generation of biofuels. The question now is, how do we get there from here? A challenge that reminds me kind of the Canadian hockey great Wayne Gretzky. You know, he talked about, I don't skate to where the puck is, I skate to where it's going to be. In North Dakota, we say it a little differently. It's like when you shoot a goose, you don't shoot at the goose, you shoot in the air ahead of the goose. You know, you need to be out in front of where we're going to be. In the broad global context here, we're looking forward to world energy demand that's going to increase by 50% by the year 2030. That's according to the International Energy Agency. 50% increase in energy use by 2030. Several billion people in the developing world are earning their way into the middle class. They're driving more cars. They're using more fuel. They're heating their homes. They're hallmarks of a better life, including better diets that include meat, which requires more feed grains, and mobility, which requires more fuel. China is already the world's second largest automobile market and the second largest oil importer. We don't need a real crystal ball here to see what's going to go on in the future. We can't meet our energy requirements 2 decades from now if we continue to solely rely on ethanol produced from feedstocks based on corn. We must progress to the next level. We must pick up the pace now as that clock starts ticking away. That means accelerating the next generation of biofuels made from waste materials like crop residues and woody biomass, new growth trees. It means dedicated energy crops like switchgrass and algae, energy crops that may even include orange peels one day. I must say I was in our citrus research lab in Florida, USDA citrus research lab, watched them make ethanol from the waste orange peels from the orange juice industry. And I'm kind of excited about that, mostly because when the car drives by, you know, it really smells good. But America's energy security is going to depend on a thriving, sustainable, next-generation biofuel industry here in the United States. And that's a tall order. You know, it's a very complex issue, but it is achievable, and it is essential for our country. And the Biofuels Action Plan is the strategic blueprint for getting us there. The plan lays out a challenge for us. Without the alternatives to petroleum products, America's reliance on foreign oil, according to the Energy Information Administration, will increase 30% by the year 2030. Now, that's kind of a surprising number to me. We import 65% of our oil already. You know, 30% increase by 2030 gets us up to about 85%. That seems unrealistic to me. But, you know, so does 65%. You know, even where we are today is a problem that we need to get through. Our transport sector's greenhouse gas emissions are expected to grow by nearly 40%, according to, again, those Energy Information Administration statistics. That's 40% increase if we don't do anything. And the Biofuels Action Plan makes clear that biofuel production by the year 2022 must be sustainable. Not only do we have to get there, we have to be sustainable in the largest sense, in economically, socially, and environmentally friendly ways. In other words, our biofuel generation must be cost effective. It must be environmentally responsible. And it must use science to ensure that the next generation of biofuels will be made mostly from feedstocks outside the food and fuel arena. In other words, those feedstocks must also be produced sustainably. Finally, the plan takes us from A to Z, moving right through the supply chain to map out the main areas for our action. Essentially, it breaks down the barriers to increase biofuel production into manageable chunks or modules. How are we going to grow the feedstocks of the future? What are they going to be, and where we're going to grow them, and how we're going to grow them is important. How do we get those feedstocks from the farm to the refineries? You know, we're using different materials. It takes different equipment, different harvesting equipment, different transportation equipment, different processes and procedures. How are we going to do that? Once those feedstocks arrive at the refineries, how are we going to convert them into fuel once we get there? And, of course, once we have the fuel, how are we going to deliver it to the places where the consumer can buy it? USDA and other federal agencies already have important research underway on high-yield biomass systems. We're developing dedicated bioenergy crops through traditional breeding, but also through advanced biotechnology. We're also studying the impact that these crops have on the sustainability of critical natural resources needed for their production, including air and water and soil. And we're looking at the indirect land effects that these crops are going to have. The science that's critical for the transition to the new bioeconomy also demands a strong partnership as we move forward in the research arena, the federal, the land grant and the private sector research coming together for this important mission. And as we make this transition, corn ethanol is the bridge to cellulosic ethanol. As we see the second generation biofuels developed through the existing industry, it's going to build on the existing ethanol infrastructure, getting ready so that when the breakthroughs come in bioenergy, when the commercialization happens in cellulosic ethanol, we don't have to sit and wait to get it into the marketplace. We'll be ready to go. One good example of that is Secretary Bodman announced last week that the Energy Department has an agreement with POET LLC. It's a large ethanol production company to construct and operate a commercial scale biorefinery. Co-located at Emmitsburg, Iowa ethanol plant, it uses the waste materials, the corn cob and the corn stover, to increase the corn-based ethanol production there by 25 million gallons a year. You know, this is only the second major cellulosic ethanol biorefinery construction award that's taken place, but it's also one of the largest the Energy Department has ever made in renewable energy. It's a cost-share project. The department's grant approaches $80 million out of a total expected project cost of nearly $200 million. On the other side of this transition, it's clear that the build-out of the advanced biofuels industry has broad implications in rural economies. It's pretty hard to quantify the gains at this point in time, but I come from rural America, and I know how the activity has changed things on the face of our rural counties and small communities. The increase in economic activity from ongoing production and from construction in new ethanol plants supported over 230,000 new jobs in all sectors of our economy in the year 2007. 60 million people live in rural America, and 58 million of them don't live on the farm. More than 95% of the total rural income is earned off the farm, but it is in those rural areas. And virtually all new jobs must come from prospects for economic growth off the farm. To keep people living and working where they want to, we need this economic activity in rural areas. The ripple effect of the bioeconomy has wide implications for industries that serve rural America. What was once just waste material now can be gathered and harvested and transported and stored. We already know that ethanol is doing what it's doing for our rural communities. And you know, ethanol isn't just corn and enzymes and chemical engineering. It's steel and it's concrete, it's water and it's wastewater, it's electrical supply and trucking and pipelines, it's jobs, it's education and information technology, and it's growth in the rural economy. And I'd like to now mention just a couple of additional actions that are going to move us forward to this future. First, the 2008 Farm Bill gave an important boost to renewable energy by committing $1 billion in funds over the next 5 years to support research and development, especially of cellulosic fuels. One of the best new programs in that effort is the ability for USDA to provide loan guarantees of up to $250 million to biorefineries that pioneer new cellulosic production technologies. We're working on implementing that program right now, and you'll be hearing from me about that in the next few weeks as we move forward to make some announcements in that arena. Second, the Biomass Research and the Development Board has called for a series of interagency reports on feedstocks, on conversion technologies, and on the distribution infrastructure. USDA is leading an interagency group in the first of these, and we're looking at the economics of the different farm and forest feedstocks right now, and that report should be ready in the next few weeks as well. But, you know, with all this activity, all the economic activity, all the importance to rural America, all the importance for energy independence in our country, and to provide energy and fuels that are more economically and less environmentally damaging. There's more to it than all of that. This really, I believe, has an opportunity to change the world as we move forward with biotechnology. I was down in Colombia recently and met with some farmers there who 4 years ago had been kicked off their land by the, or 5 years ago or so, had been kicked off the land by the drug lords there that wanted to grow illicit products. So these farmers were out in the jungle foraging, trying to make food, trying to make half a living to keep, you know, food in their children's stomachs. And they came together with the help of the United States of America. Our citizens' tax dollars, through several programs, went and helped them form an alliance. 500 farmers came together, and they started growing palm fruits for biodiesel. And they got an investor that spent the money and built a biodiesel or an oil crushing facility to get the oil for biodiesel. 49% of it is owned by this group of 500 farmers. The money that's coming off of the biodiesel refinery now is helping them build new schools, improve their houses, build community centers and health facilities. But I also was talking to one farmer who had 18 kids. He had 12 children from his first family, and now he's starting on his second family. And he talked about living out in the jungle and tried to feed them. And now 4 years later, with the help of biofuels, he was making some money. He was on his land. He was buying some more land. He paid off his debts. And he had three of his kids in school in the United States of America. Now that's what lifts a country. And that really is what lifts our country. The important work that we do, I believe, is so important. As we move forward here, we'll change the face of the United States of America with biofuels. We'll make a better country in which we can all live. So I want to thank you for all that you do, all your efforts, and wish you Godspeed in your efforts. Thank you. Yeah, thank you.